At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Hello, Mavs fans, friends. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bowe. Welcome to Pod Maverick. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
So, before we start the podcast, I think it's worth contextualizing my day.
That's fair.
It's just, so my eldest child does, he's like nine. It's fine. It's a good kid. He means well. But he does this maddening thing on weekends where he like wakes up at the ass crack of dawn because he thinks he's going to miss something. Then on weekdays, getting him out of bed is very difficult because he's tired. Mondays particularly. So you start off the day real bad. That's fine. Whatever. You get him gone. And then I almost immediately, when my workday starts, I get a call from my boss. And my boss and I don't talk that much because we don't really need to. But he starts yelling at me about something. And he's on my rear from the moment he calls me. And it turns out what he's pissed at is something that one of my colleagues did. One of my colleagues named Kurt. Okay. K-U-R-T. And I think he kind of realizes it like halfway through as he's upset. Because I'm just kind of like, I can take criticism. I get yelled at by you idiots on the internet all day. I don't give a shit about, somebody else and my children yell at me. It's just one more person that's unhappy with me. And so I kind of figure out, and he I think he realizes it too, but then he was on vacation, so he made it my problem, which was a real fun way to start the day after the child thing. And then two or three more other dumb things happened, and then my car, like, gear shift broke. Thank goodness not on the highway, but we've just had a very dumb day, and it was kind of, it punctuated isn't fair, but, you log on the old internet this morning, and you see, some very, and I mean this lovingly, felt very MySpace profile photo, angled photo shoot of Luka Doncic for Men's Health magazine. And we're a Dallas Mavericks podcast, but we're, I think, obligated to talk about this profile for a little bit. So why don't you kind of kick us off and I'm going to chime in.
Sure. I think it kind of sparked, it just relitigated, and there's nothing, if this happens, in 6 months when there's games going on, it's July, summer league's over. It's almost August. It was a perfect time for this to drop. And so you just got Mavs fans were talking about it, and you got one side of the spectrum that were Mavs fans that were like, oh, well, of course, now he's getting into shape after the Mavericks traded for him and all this, yada, yada. And then you got the other, another side of Mavs fans that were like, well, this is just him getting away from toxic Nico and the training staff that ruined him. And people wanted to talk about it. And I think we just had to we relitigated the Luka Doncic fitness conversation, which was probably my least favorite conversation.
Sure.
That we had to talk about because there was no winning it. Nope. It didn't matter what we said. If we brought it up, someone was going to get mad and yell at us. And I get that's part of the gig is you're going to say something and you're going to piss off at least one person.
We had people arguing with us because it's like.
But people get really mad about the fitness stuff. And they get personal, which is fine. Because
it reflects them about how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah.
And I understand that because, both of us have battled, let's just say, large man's disease and certain points in our life.
That's the nicest way I've ever heard it.
Which we're both better now, which is important.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Proving that it can be done. But it really was. It was just a nasty conversation from the get-go. And it's so funny because the bubble in 2020, so we're talking August 2020, Luka plays one of the best games of his life. I got the photo up on my wall. And less than 4 months later, he rolled into camp. Well over 280. And look, I'm not interested in debating with anybody. It's the truth. It's what was reported. It's what my eyes show. It's what
you don't even need to see the reporting. We saw it.
You can go look up Getty photos, a preseason game against the Milwaukee Bucks, where Drew Holiday is bouncing off his belly, and it's like a and he still put up like 30 points.
No, I know.
And so that's kind of when this all started. He got in pretty dang good shape for 21-22.
By the end of the season, yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah, because 21, was that right?
22, that was a conference finals season.
Yeah. So that's 2 years after that. Year four was conference finals, right?
No, 2022 was conference finals.
Which that was before.
2020 was the first playoff bubble. Then 2021 was when they lost the Clippers again in game seven and Carlo gets fired. Donna gets fired.
That because KP was rehabbing. You're right about this. That was the really rough one where they started off hot. KP was dead to rights. Carlo kind of killed the Mavs in game three. Yeah, you're right. Anyways, but that season he was in great shape. Finished real well. 21-22 was obviously a good season. 23-24, he just starts off like he never got back to the way he looked when he was 19, is more or less one of the challenges we ran into. And that was compounded by the fact that the data started showing that he was going to the rim less. He was, you know, it felt like the ref bitching ticked up. And there's just all these factors. But the challenge that we're going to have to deal with for years is like the Mavericks, and he succeeded in spite of all this.
Right. And I think that's why it became such a topic, because it was like, what else do you talk about him in terms of like improving? Because he made five straight first team all NBAs. So it's like, okay, well, he's obviously like pretty good.
His free throws, like we were bitching about his free throws, and like
even what else is there left to talk about with him, you know, in terms of improvement? I think, like, just thinking about it, and you know, I talked about it on Twitter a little bit, but like the big thing was with him was obviously he had some weight fluctuation and his fitness went ebbed and flowed. My thing that was always crazy was he's like an amoeba, like he's a shapeshifter, like his ability to go from wow, he looks great to wow, he looks slow and heavy. Like it
game to game.
Yeah, it changed so quickly. And that was the problem, was he would have summers where he'd be playing with the Slovenian team, so he didn't have his normal offseason, and he'd come into the so he would play international, he would have a long season, they would play in the playoffs, then he would do Slovenian national team. And by the time he's done with his basketball commitments, he has like what, like a month? And he needs to rest. Like, you can't just go from that to train, go nuts. So he rests. The problem is when he rests, he really lets it get, like, he just really
he had up go. Until the up until right now he up had kind of right he had taken the vacation to heart.
Yeah, and so then he comes back and he has to ramp himself up, and then he gets into game shape, and then he's good, and then you know, he started dealing with injuries, but a lot of that, you know, the training staff changes with Nico Harrison. The big thing for me was, you know, when he would come into camp bigger than he needed to be. And then like, what was it, 2024 or was it this past season? They faked his wrist injury so that he could kind of have another
season because he got
any training camp to get back into shape. Cause he got was hurt kicked. At training camp.
Yeah. He got the report. And even McMahon says this is as he understood it. It's not like they were covering this up. He got kicked in training camp, which I still don't understand how the fuck anyone kicks Luka Doncic in the calf. Like cut that person's foot off for kicking Luka in the calf. And that aggravated the injury. And then they more or less used the wrist as a cover to help him get into shape once the season started, when it was obvious he just wasn't where he wanted to be physically.
Right. And it just felt like setback. Like he just constantly would go in and out and he would get hurt. The thing with him was he would get into shape and he would get hurt, and like he just lost it while he was mm-hmm. hurt whenever he mm-hmm. had to rest for an extended period. And, you know, we saw back and forth, he would have some, you know, he would have some pretty groggy, heavy looking nights and be like, what's going on? And then he 2 weeks later, he's dropping 45 point triple double. And he's like, okay, he's back.
Well, I'm always going to wonder for the rest of my days, how much Jason Kidd not taking the doldrum game seriously impacted Luka not taking the doldrums game seriously. Do you know what I mean by that? Where yeah. it felt like your post-Christmas games up until All-Star break, where the Mavericks just stopped being coached and stopped trying stuff. And night in, night out, it was a bit of a drag. I mean, if you go look at Kidd's record by month throughout his entire career, those middle months sag. Not horribly, but when you're playing, I don't know, winning 4-10 instead of, you know, 5.5-10, it just starts to catch up.
No, I know. And I think the main thing I want, you know, people just getting angry. Like, let's be honest, like the Mavericks regime, both regimes under Luka, so the Cuban Donnie Nelson and then the Nico Jason Kidd, or whatever you want to call it, post-Cuban. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both of those regimes failed Luka because the first one was so terrified of him potentially leaving. Because you remember the rookie season, they missed the playoffs. Second season, they lose in the first round. Then they lose in the first round again. And the roster had really stagnated by that 2021 playoff loss. I mean, we're talking like they had a lot of work to do that they hadn't really done. And they didn't challenge Luka because they were like, we have to bend over backwards to make this guy happy, and we don't want to lose him. Then the second regime wasn't scared of losing him because clearly they didn't care. You know, Nico Harrison clearly didn't take long for him not to care for him. But then they went the other way where they just kind of were like, oh, we don't like you, and we're not going to talk to you about it. Like, we've made up our minds. We don't want to fight you. We're going to isolate you. We're going to fire your trainers and staff that you like. We're going to get rid of the people you like. And we're going to like passive aggressively tell you to get better instead of just sitting down with you and telling you, hey, let's get better. So both regimes failed him. The Nico training staff was a disaster. Luka's piled up more injuries after Casey Smith left than before. I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence, although you can factor in that his training contribute, you know, he's picked up a lot of soft tissue injuries.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor. I don't want to say one-to-one.
Basketball's a physical sport, and he's a big, strong guy playing a high-leverage game.
Yeah, but that's part of it, and I think most people agree. But, like, he's made five first-team All-NBAs. He's now 25 years old. He's a grown man who's been playing professional sports for a long time. Luka has to take some of the responsibility.
Yes.
The Mavericks failed him, but he can't. You can't put it all on the Mavericks. And no, some people just want to say it's all Nico bad, Luka's perfect angel. And I get it.
I got like, a lot of that today. There's a shared
responsibility here between the player and the team.
And I got a lot of that today.
Because you're discounting Luka if you think Luka has no say in his fitness and conditioning level. Like, he's a brilliant player. Sure. If you're saying he can't help, like, you're kind of dismissing how good Luka is, right? Like, if you think that he can't get himself into shape without the team doing it for him, like, he can do it. Like, it's not like he's sitting on his ass all summer. Like, you don't be as good as Luka and not work hard in the offseason. But clearly, there needed to be more than just working hard in the offseason to keep him at the level he needed to be at.
Well, one of the takeaways I took, great English, Kirk. One of the things I took from Tim McMahon's book is that the early Mavericks, and I think Jason Kidd adapted some of this, found they really were like sought out ways to keep Luka engaged in the doldrums of the NBA, just because there's lots of games, not a lot of time for practice. They sought different ways to sort of challenge him, to keep him focused, to press him, because his competitive side would really come out. And we've seen this in the court. You know, you get challenged a certain way, he would show up. The thing that I just can't believe is that two regimes were so concerned about the possibility of him walking, and really the first one more than the second one.
But yeah, I think the second regime didn't care if he
walked. That they just and there's folks in the comments saying, "Oh well, I'm sure they talked to Luka. I'm sure they talked to Luka." Like, guys, I'm just telling you, from all the people I speak with, which is a lot of Mavs reporters who do the work, these guys all say this stuff too.
nobody talked to Luka. Nobody really, like, there was not a...
And the people that might have, like, they fight, like, they got rid of the training staff he liked that was well regarded. So, like,
they're not going to sit down. We're, like, there was never a...
Like a come to Jesus conversation.
I mean, you know, I hate to frame it this way, but it's just, it's like everybody that's listening to this podcast has had a job. I'm guessing we don't have any children that like listen to this pod. And I'm not sure about you guys, but I've worked in just enough quasi-toxic environments where between HR and management, a lot of times management just doesn't want to deal with problems within an office, whether it's with a high performer or a low performer. Okay. Sometimes the easiest thing to do is to just move on. It's very difficult to have conversations, particularly with the high performer, where you think they could be getting better. And that Nico Harrison and Kidd and these guys never ever, you know, in a postseason, like the person who went the hardest on Luka Doncic ever was Brian Windhorst. Okay. Like there was never anybody even within the Mavs market like that was all that critical of him. You see Brad Townsend out here walking into traffic with some of his tweets over the last couple hours about Luka Doncic, where he's just like, well, if Luka would have done this when he was here. And it's like, didn't see you calling him out on it when you were here, big guy. Didn't see you doing anything like that. And yes, yeah, Fresh Prince says the irony of Wendy, but like, at least somebody had the guts to say, all right, here's where we think this generational player needs to step up.
Yeah. And it wasn't, and people confuse the, like, he needs to get in shape with like, well, he's not good enough. No, he's good enough. And we all say like, he racked up the accomplishments despite not being totally 100%. Like, but that doesn't mean he, like, just because he can get away with it doesn't mean he should. Like, again, we're talking about very razor thin margins when you get to like needing to win a championship. Things need to break your way. You could do everything the right way and you still don't win because there is amount of luck involved. So it comes down to, are you doing everything within your control to reach that goal? And with Luka and his fitness, I don't think it's bad to say that maybe he didn't do 100%. And it's not an indictment on his career. He's 25, but it's just like, we have to talk about like what's happening, because, well, he's already scoring a bunch of points and he's a great passer. Like, he needs to improve his passing. Well, no, like, what's left for him to improve? The final step for him, it was his fitness, and that doesn't discredit what he's done. It's just more just like,
well, and
here's
to
where
me,
he can go next.
The worst part about this is that we're never really gonna know, because we didn't get to see him start the year 2025 in any 2024-25 in any sort of shape, because he was hurt immediately. Now, there's folks that are quite reasonably point to his injuries and say, well, this is part of the problem. But I just wanted to note that, like, I 100% understand and believe Luka has agency in this. I just think that when someone is this talented and this sort of like he didn't even need to be coddled. That's what makes all this so maddening. It's like, I was talking to Chris Henderson, another Mavs content creator today. And I said, it's like, if you're dating well above your station and you spend the whole relationship freaking out about the fact that you nabbed the hot girl, instead of figuring out how to make it permanent. And that's what the Mavs did. They spent so much time worrying that they created the problem. Yeah. And, you know, Luka was shamed into this. He was. And it sucks because, you know, now we're going to have to watch him this year. And if he is as good as a lot of us think he is, this is going to be a not fun thing to watch.
I know. And you wish that, you know, people that are like, well, why didn't he do it here? And
yeah,
I mean, I get it, but also clearly, I mean, he's been traded. Like, this organization was not going to push it. Like, I don't, if he didn't get traded, I mean, it's kind of like, you can't even answer that question, because he didn't get traded because he requested it. He got traded because the leadership didn't want him on the team anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. to say like, well, what if he stayed? Well, the leadership's still here.
Yeah.
Like, they still wouldn't have pushed him or motive because they didn't want to have that conversation with him. So I don't know if anything would have changed, because Nico's still here. And those issues with the training staff and and them talking to him, that's just a point that's hard to even, like, a hypothetical that, like, I can't even entertain.
I don't know. This is just, it's funny because I've, you know, we're going to have to acknowledge it regularly. We're going to have to acknowledge it regularly, the Luca of it all. It's not something we can bypass. Yeah. But I actually thought we'd gotten to a pretty good point to where we just didn't really need to talk about it.
I know. Can I bring up one more thing?
Of course.
About this, because it's kind of been eating at me, and I think it's probably going to get me yelled at. But thankfully, it's August, almost August, so maybe no one's listening, and no one will clip it or anything or make fun of me. But I saw our good friends Bobby Corral at DLLS and Kevin Gray. I think Bobby tweeted it, and like Kevin kind of shared this point as well. That interview with Dirk, where Dirk kind of said it took him like 8 years in the NBA before he really started caring about his diet, nutrition, and keeping his body in that kind of shape. And it's been kind of like the smoking gun of like, you know, Luka is in year what, 6 or going into year 7, I think. You know, just kind of making the correct point, though, that it takes time for guys to figure some stuff out. Michael Jordan didn't win a title till he was 27. LeBron didn't win a title till he was 27. Luka's 25, going to turn 26. I just want to push back on a little bit on that point. Dirk didn't know or focus on his diet and nutrition until he was 8 years in. But Dirk was a maniac in his off-season workouts with Holger in his early 20s. And I don't ever remember, yeah, we watched him. Were there ever moments in Dirk's early 20s where you're like, whoa, this guy he's out of shape. He's winded.
No.
Like he looked like the only thing you could say about Dirk is when he entered the league in 1998 was he was scrawny and weak as fuck. Yeah, like he was not, you know, he was not ready for NBA physicality. He needed to get in the weight room, but he did, like, by what? Like maybe 2001, he was physically, yeah, like, I wasn't worried about Dirk's physical conditioning at any point after maybe like his rookie or second year.
I mean, like, let's just be honest here. Luka's the first basketball player, like high level basketball player, that's played for the Mavericks in our kind of fandom lifetime where we've been like, man, this guy in shape. Like, we just never had that conversation because Dirk played forever. Nash had some back issues. Finley, as we discussed last time, was a fucking tank. It's just a different deal.
Yeah, I don't want to kill Luka too much about this because he's obviously working on it. But I just like comparing him to Dirk in that sense. Like, I'm sorry, when Dirk was 23 years old, they weren't faking an injury for him so that he could get conditioning done so he can get back in better shape. Like,
yeah, no,
I know people are going to get mad at me and piss me off.
I don't think so.
It's like, just, you know, again, comparing anyone to Dirk, I think is a bad, like, I just don't compare Luka to Dirk. Like, it's just, you're going to, it's not a clean comparison as much as we want to do it. And I think Bobby and Kevin are right to bring that up in terms of it takes guys time to figure some things out, but I don't think that's the, we'll see. He's, you know, it was fine. Like, he's just figuring, like, it's not that either. And I don't know if Kevin and Bobby were implying that, but I just saw other people take that and then use that as like an excuse for what Luka's fitness was like in his early 20s. And I'm like, that can't explain it all the way. So that part just irked me. But also, it's because I think part of it is we lived it and we saw it. And I'm sure there's people that took that point that did not watch Dirk when he was 22, 23 years old, but they've watched Luka. And you had, you know, if you saw both of them when they were 22 years old, if you're an adult who watched Dirk as a 22 year old and you watch Luka as an adult, when he was a 22-year-old, it is not comparable in terms of their work ethic, I think, in terms of their fitness. And Kevin says, the point you made is what I was trying to say. So that's good. Okay, I'm glad. I just saw the tweet, and I saw people take the tweet and take that point, and it felt like it kind of trying to let Luke off.
I
just didn't like that because, you know, I don't get fanboy-y about a lot of things, but, like, it's still Dirk. Like, Dirk's the reason I'm here. Like,
well,
I wouldn't be here for
Dirk. I had a lot of mostly productive conversations today. So, like, if somebody's going to argue with me about this or that, and it's kind of in the details, the one thing I just want everyone to kind of really take a breath and understand is that, like, Luka's going to have it out for any team that employs Nico Harrison until the end of fucking time. just like Luka lost $100 million in this transaction. Like, we don't talk about that part enough. $100 million. And I have people telling me, ah, well, you can make him whole through endorsements and yada yada. And I'm just gonna say I don't think that's true.
You know, like, what Luka would like? He would like that $100 million and the endorsements. I know, right. He's gonna get more in LA, but like, wait, he wasn't getting any in Dallas? Like, he was a top jersey seller. He's Jordan's number one guy. What do we, like, did people think he like Luka? I understand that there's a difference going from Dallas to LA in terms of like media attention. But let's not act like Luka was hiding under a fucking rock when he was in Dallas. Right. He was all over the place.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Well,
in the way, you know, and there's all sorts of different stuff that come with being an athlete in California. It's just one of those things that made me laugh, and I'm just thinking about it. And oh well. Okay, so we're gonna take a break here. This was
told you we could get a lot of this.
Oh, you sorry, yeah, of course. Well, we can talk about anything. Josh and I will be right back. I'm gonna insert some ads and we're gonna play Let's Remember Some Guys. So hang on, we will be right back. Okay, thank you so much for sticking with us. We finally crossed a rather boring YouTube number. We're like four people away from 3,600. Do you want to be the 3,600th subscriber to Pod Maverick? I don't know. Let's just say our channel growth has been a little slower. One of the funnier things talking to the people in Vegas was being, oh, has your traffic picked back up since you got Flag? And I had to be like, nope. But I do think Flag is going to be really fun to cover, which we're going to be doing regularly this year. Josh and I do this as our weird little quasi adjacent to Mavs Moneyball podcast. There's our post game shows. I'm sort of having brain rot, so I haven't been able to remember to do the Friday shows that I'd like to do. But you know, it's July. We'll get into August here, and hopefully things will pick back up. We will see where things are going. Josh, did you have any opportunity? Because I kind of forgot. I didn't remind you we were doing this. Do we have any thoughts for?
I'll go with a more. I want to stick to players. Like, I don't want to pick guys within like the last 10 years or so. I don't know. I want to try to pick guys that played when we didn't have HD television.
Sure.
Just to get those guys out of the way, and then we could talk more about the guys.
I picked one that I rarely went through some rosters, and I pick a guy that really stuck with me. But that's fine. Okay.
This is not an obscure name, but it's just an older name. But Josh Howard, who I think was my favorite for a long time, was my favorite player after Dirk for basically middle school and high school for me, okay. Which was like the formative years of basketball for me. That's where I fell in love with the sport. You know, it's where I went from like, hey, you have to play this because you're tall. And I was like, okay, well, I don't like this. This kind of sucks. And to know this is what I like, and I want to do this forever if I can. I love Josh Howard because he was kind of, you know, you remember that 2003 team and even the 2004 team, that 2003 team that made the West Finals, and like the Mavericks had that reputation as like run and gun, and they just didn't have a defensive edge. And Howard was like everything the team, like athletic, rangy wing player that can play defense on a basketball team that had Dirk and, you know, Nash and Finley, but like they just didn't have that swing player that could lock down what felt like a golden age of like two guards. Like you had Kobe, you had Tracy McGrady, then you had Dwayne Wade. Like the scoring guards of the mid 2000s, like there were, you know, Paul Pierce was still a terror in that era. Like there, not to say that there isn't right now, but there was just a lot of 6'5" to 6'7" all time scoring threats. And the Mavericks, it never felt like until Howard showed up that they had anyone that they could credibly throw on them. Besides like they put like an Adrian Griffin or like, you know, those defensive specialists, but then they get played off the court because they can't score any points. And Howard was great because he could score. He was a good scorer. I love, you know, he was the 29th pick of the first round, like nearly the last pick.
He fell for hilarious reasons, like reasons that would not happen today.
Right. Like, because his profile was. He was kind of a I was much more into college basketball back then. It was shocking to me that he was available with that pick, because he was,
I mean, he smoked weed and that scared teams.
I know. He was one of the best players in college basketball the year before, you know,
or ACC player of the year. Like, he did stuff that like hadn't been done before in terms of like award out of Wake Forest, right?
Player of the year, consensus first team All America. Yeah. Like, he was a no doubter, but And of course, you know, that stuff ended up coming back to bite him later on, but he was already kind of starting to
wean out his game. The physicality of the NBA took a toll on him later, but like, he had a really incredible like first 6 or 6 to 7 years.
Yeah, and he was a great and just his style was fun. Like, I loved his in-between game. He had a good floater. He had a good mid-range jumper. You know, he hustled like hell. He had the longest fucking arms I can ever remember of like a wing player. I don't know what his wingspan is, but it felt like his wingspan was like 8 feet long. Like, he had arms for miles, it felt like. He had a 7 foot wingspan at 6'7".
He would go up for offensive rebounds. I remember being like, how in the hell is he coming down with that? And then he did.
His second jump was really good. Someone comments PTA cards and games, first quarter scoring king. Yeah, like, that was the Mavericks' bread and butter. Like, he would score like 11 points in the first quarter, and then Dirk would carry you from there. And he was such a good complementary player to Dirk, because Dirk didn't need to be ball dominant. And so, like, the way that those two could kind of coexist, because Howard was also a really good off-ball player. He was a good cutter, good offensive rebounder, like you said. Turned himself into a good spot-up shooter. And Dirk is obviously an awesome off-ball player. So the way it was like, all right, Howard, you go, and I'll just be the greatest floor-spacing big man of all time while you work your in-between game. And then Dirk is setting up in the post, and Howard is cutting and screening and doing all his off-ball stuff. Like, it was just a really good fit. And, of course, he's part of maybe – like, that 2006 team outside of the 2011 team is probably my favorite Mavericks team that I ever got to watch in person. The 2024 team was great, but I was more of a fan back in 2006. Sure. Yeah, 2006 team was special. That run was special. Howard was awesome in that seven-game series against the Spurs in the Western Conference semifinals. He was great. I loved him, and I think as time goes on, like, that era is kind of like you kind of just think about Dirk and you think about Jet. And the rest of the names, because they didn't win, it becomes harder to kind of hold on to them. Like, everyone will remember the 2011 names forever because they won. And I would retire. I mean, I'm sentimental, but I would retire Josh Howard's jersey.
Hopefully new ownership. You know, if they're Cuban was really asinine about jersey retirement. Of the many things he was so brilliant at. He celebrated, and they celebrated Cuba or Dirk so well. It kind of confuses me as to why there isn't more game, like, year to year recognition of these guys. Like, these guys, that's a longer conversation. But Howard is just, he's the kind of guy that matters a lot. And I mean, you talk about the 06 team. I like the rookie year team for Howard a lot. That was just a fun basketball team that had no business being as fun as it was.
His rookie year?
Yeah, because that was when they got Marquise Daniels, too.
Yes.
Who will probably circle another back guy, at a certain point in time. But, like, he was, as an undrafted guy, like, man, they just threw out these occasional lineups where it's like you got Dirk, who's starting to turn into he's in year 5 or 6, 7. But he's just – there starts to be a pretty wild difference between, like, 2000 to 2002 Dirk versus 2006 to 2008 Dirk. Like, the athleticism level is just different. It's okay. Yep. It happens. But Dirk was like a wild athlete. Then all of a sudden he kind of wasn't. And then seeing him flank with like these two just rangy guys, it was really fun. I really liked watching Josh Howard play. I liked watching him just do a lot of the little stuff. Like, if I were to Josh Howard's the kind of guy that like I would show like in his earlier seasons in particular, when he was still kind of a jack of all trades dude, he is the guy I would like want to show my kid, like, hey, try to play like this guy. This guy winning plays.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's so easy to focus on the ball, and the kind of stuff that guy did both offensively and defensively is pretty great. Yeah. So was it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay, so I couldn't help myself here because I was clicking through, and sometimes I have a really hard time picking. So this is an idea that I've had in my head for a while, but we just haven't had the off seasons to do it. And the guy that I wanted to pick today was a one season wonder, who just kind of the quintessential Rick Carlisle takes a guy and makes him something. And that's Al Farouq Aminu, who played one game with the Dallas Mavericks, or one game, one season with the Dallas Mavericks in the 2014-15 season. And he was really fun. And he ended up signing a bigger deal to go play. Where did he play after the Mavericks? He played, was it Portland? Yeah, he played Portland and then kind of bounced around. I mean, he was out of the league after he was 30 years old. Kind of a... We get spoiled by these guys that play 20 years. I mean, most NBA careers are like 5 to 8 years long. Even first round pick.
Man, I never put to like that his career ended at age 30. Like that just seemed for the kind of player he would, like, I don't know. You would think he would have, but he never developed a 3-point shot, which is
awesome. Was so funny. So, right. So the 1 year that he plays in the Mavericks, so he really bounces around the league. He spends his rookie year with the Clippers, then ends up with the Pelicans for the remainder of his rookie deal. Nobody signs him. He takes a make good deal after his rookie year ends with the Dallas.
And he was the eighth overall pick. So to get the eighth overall pick after his rookie contract ends for basically free.
And like
tells you a lot.
the Dallas Mavericks of 2014-2015 finished 50-32. Okay, 50-32, and guess where they finished in the division?
I think they were third.
Fourth,
okay.
With 50 wins. This is why some of us like remember the Western Conference and the Southwest just so like angrily. And like this was the team, you know, that they ended up trading for Rajon Rondo. That was kind of, you know, this was that team. The team that started off with shout out to our gosh, what was his name? Who did stat skip ball? For us. Do you remember?
Hal
Ken. Brown. Sorry, buddy, if you're listening to the show, but he wrote this amazing column that still sort of lives in my head that in the early part of the 2014-15 season, where he's like, the Dallas Mavericks are the greatest offense of all time. And up until they traded Rondo, they were playing. They were amazing because this is a team like Brandon Wright, et cetera. And Al Farouq Aminu, who's my guy, we've not even talked about him that much, you know, he's signed is and you're looking at the roster and they're just kind of a weird collection of guys, but somehow Al Farouq Aminu works his way into the rotation as a guy. He plays 74 games, averages, you know, just under 20 minutes. He doesn't shoot the ball particularly well, but he keeps getting playing time. And I just remember really enjoying elements of his game because he would do things in a kind of like Josh Howard through a fax machine sort of way. You know, he's a little bigger, a little rangier, but like just an athlete who had a nose for certain things. Like his role with the Mavericks was like very specific, obviously. Yes,
play defense
and if you hit some shots, like that's just fine. You know, and he doesn't average a ton with the Mavericks that year or something. What is it here? Something kind of low key. I have all these tabs pulled up and they just disappear from me when you go away. You know, he only averaged like a little under 6 points. He averaged like less than, but almost a steal and a block a game in those 18 minutes. So it's like he was out there to disrupt, almost 5 rebounds in 19 minutes a game. Like he was a disruptive player for the Mavericks in a way that helped the team. Lockdown wins. And I was just sort of thinking about him because I remember he signs this big deal with Portland and we're all kind of pissed off. I just remember our site being angry because I think folks liked watching him. But yeah, the reality is his shooting was just so bad that there was not really a reason for him to end up playing for the team. Like he has this he has a couple of like outlier games, particularly towards the end of the regular season as Dallas is working their way towards the playoffs, where he's hitting, you know, I don't know, a three every game out of 2 shots. And it's like, it kind of boosts his averages a little bit.
No. Yeah. And also like, you know, that off season, he signed that deal with Portland because he ended, you know, you look at the last 3 playoff games, he had, he played very well and played a high minutes role. Mm-hmm. And those were the three.
Oh, that's right. Looking at the playoff log now. Yeah.
Yeah. They needed him in the worst way. When Carlisle finally kind of unleashed him in game three, now they still lost two of the three final games of the series, but they won in the game that he played his most minutes. That's the only win they got in that series. And the other two games were close.
Was that the series where Parsons got hurt?
Parsons got hurt, and then Rondo left game two and was out for the rest because they just said you can go home. There's that. He had a C. I'm looking through his because I remember like his defense was great.
Yeah,
and like his rebounding, assist, block, his rebounding, block, steal numbers for how many minutes he played are kind of crazy.
Right.
He had a month in February where he finally played a bunch because there might have been injuries or something, but he played 24 minutes a game and averaged 1.5 blocks and 1.3 steals in 24 minutes a game.
That's wild.
Like, that's a lot. Like those are good block steal numbers for like a full-time 30-minute, mm-hmm. 35-minute per game player. And he did that in 24 minutes. And he was also averaging 6.5 rebounds. Like, yeah. If his per, what were his per? I want to look it up. His per 36 because he did stuff. Like he racked up numbers, and it was for a team that desperate. Because remember, they needed defense in the worst way. Like their offense was incredible.
Like Chandler was back, but this anymore. was like tail end of his peak prime. Dirk is 36. Devin Harrison's back with the team. Like go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. Per 36, 9 rebounds, which is whatever. But 1.8 blocks and 1.6 steals from your 6'8 wing.
This was just a peak, remember, some guys' team. There are some incredible guys.
Oh, yeah. Jameer Nelson.
Yeah.
Wow. Brandon Wright, who I'm definitely picking for one of our next shows because he's one of my favorite players. Amino was great. And again, kind of what they needed. And he was also, he was pinnacle of like that era of Mavericks basketball, mm-hmm. where the front office kept wanting to sign max free agents or nothing. And it was always nothing because of max free. They were never going to sign a max free agent because that's just not how things worked. But they kept thinking that just because they had cap space, they were going to sign away one of these max guys, not understanding how things work. And then it was like, oh, Rick, well, we don't want to, And instead of like when they would strike out, instead of like using that cap space to sign like the next tier, they would instead just keep the powder dry. Remember, that was the phrase. And they would sign all these 1 year, Island of Misfit toy guys and be like, all right, Rick, figure it out. And Rick always figured it out because Rick was awesome. And then you also had Dirk, who was like maybe the most malleable superstar ever. And Aminu felt like the pinnacle of that, of just like, yeah, we'll just pick this guy off the scrap heap and he's going to play 38 minutes in a playoff game and basically help us win the game with a double-double. He was awesome.
Oh, this is nice. We start off with some grumpy shit that hopefully people listen to, and then we end with some nice remembering some guys discussion. Do we got anything else before we get out of here?
I think I'm okay.
Yeah, I am too. I think we got about another, like August is going to be a bit of a slog, and I'm not sure what we're going to talk about in August. I've not listened to Tim Cato going on Howard Beck yet, so I can't argue with Tim about any of his takes. I've not honestly caught up on DLLS. I did laugh my ass off at Nick Angstad pointing out the health feature.
Luca's vertical at the combine when he didn't.
Luca had a 42-inch vertical. It's like if Luca has had a 42-inch vertical, he would have gone number one in every draft for a decade.
He would not have passed. He would not have been available at number three. I love non-sports writers writing about sports, and I also love sports writers writing about non-sports.
That's right. It's the best. It's the best. Okay, Kirk Henderson, Josh Bowe, Pod Maverick. Please hit that subscribe button. Feel free to leave comments, shoot us messages. Josh might not check them, but I do because I'm a sicko. We'll be back next week. If I do something Friday, we'll see. I'm not really sure. Everybody be good. Go Mavs.